You ask for the cases that you want. Collaboration is the new competition.
Welcome to Personal Injury Mastermind. I'm your host, Chris Dreyer, founder and CEO of Rankings.io, the legal marketing company the best firms hire when they want the rankings, traffic, and cases other law firm marketing agencies can't deliver. Each week, you get insights and wisdom from some of the best in the industry. Do me a favor and hit that follow button right now to subscribe. You'll be the first to get every new episode delivered straight to you the moment it drops, giving you the edge. All right, let's dive in. True industry leaders serve the needs of modern clients by staying agile and embracing change. Today's guest is a prime example of how a homegrown legacy firm can build on its success and accelerate growth through innovation. With deep roots in North Carolina and a family legacy in law, Ben Whitley, managing partner at the Whitley Law Firm, has a unique perspective on what it takes to build a successful practice that stands the test of time. Founded by Ben's father, Bob, in 1974, the firm has grown to an impressive size. With a legal team of six attorneys and a staff of 50 plus, the firm has dedicated teams of pre-litigation, intake, workers' compensation, litigation case management, investigations, mass tort compensation, finance and operations, allowing them to provide comprehensive services to their clients. The Whitley Law Firm has six locations across the state, but they serve the entire state of North Carolina, demonstrating their commitment to accessibility and client service. What really sets Ben apart is that he challenges traditional ways of thinking, embracing new strategies to better serve his clients. Ben's commitment to growth goes beyond marketing. He looks to other industries to adopt best practices for leadership and operations. He also is a firm believer in the power of collaboration and shares his insights with us today. Here's Ben Whitley, managing partner at Whitley Law Firm, explaining how he came to work with his father's firm.
Hearing stories about my dad's cases, how he helped people. And, you know, back then, Chris, kind of before all this nicheiness of where we focused, a lot of times lawyers just kind of did everything. And he started his firm. He did criminal law, family practice, and it was a kind of a general practice. And, you know, sometimes the criminal cases were interesting because you'd get paid sometimes in stereo equipment. People didn't have money. I remember being a kid and all this new stereo equipment came because he was helping a guy with the shop. But I've always liked airplanes, Chris. I didn't know at the beginning that I was going to be a lawyer. I kind of wanted to be an airline pilot. And it wasn't until college that kind of you start seeing how you can really help people with your mind and do other things that it kind of pulled me in a little bit closer.
Yeah, it's funny. We were doing my research. That was one of my curveball questions I was going to ask is about the airline pilot.
Flying was a big part of my life. And so since I was 17, I've had my license. So at least I've been able to incorporate that both into my world and my life outside of the law, which I think is very important. You can get compassion fatigue. You can, you know, you're helping solve people's problems. So having some escape literally in the air, it's been something that kind of feeds that little bit of my childhood soul that I needed as well.
Because you had that passion for it, have you had any, you know, aviation cases or something where you've had like this unique experience and could speak to it? Have you taken on those types of cases?
You know, they're not very infrequent, thankfully. Growing up with general aviation and being involved, getting all the way up to my commercial pilot's license, I've just kind of been around it a long time. When you're taking a deposition about flying and something that you naturally know, you definitely can incorporate that into your skill. But the thing that about it that really is cool for me is that with the law, I always kind of think about it's fun to use your mind to solve problems, like to map it out. And sometimes cases take us so long. But with flying, I can be in my mind, all right, here's the takeoff, here's the cruise, here's the landing, and then it all works. In the same way, it's fun for me for clients' cases because you think about the life of the case and you kind of map it out. It takes a lot longer, but the same satisfaction of being able to use your mind, get to that result, it all kind of fits together. I like the flying because it's a little bit more, like it's hands-on and I can get a result. Sometimes clients have to wait years, as everybody in the PI world knows.
Yeah. And sometimes it's like, I guess with the practice of law too, it's really objective. Like, did you do a good job or not? And it's a zero sum game when you go to court and if you're going to win or lose. So you know, that competitive side, that's got to feel nice too. I was looking at your father's bio and right out of the gate, it says he bleeds North Carolina. And you grew up in North Carolina. You've narrowed the practice to PI. So many firms kind of get the shiny object or they want to go to a different jurisdiction because, you know, you guys are big advertisers and you're getting cases all over the place. Like, what's been the thought behind, you know, staying so focused in that territory?
The principles of our advertising has always been approachability and authenticity. So it's something that's a lot less less energy to be yourself. We feel like being able to maintain that North Carolina roots, we talk about it in our advertising. Chris, I recently did a TV commercial where I was talking about, you know, you're not the Siouan type. And North Carolinians just kind of want to figure things out. And that's really the root of it. North Carolina is typically a rural, mostly rural state with pockets of urban development. But it's a purple state, so people are very middle of the road. We tend to kind of be a real down-to-earth, not litigious. So being able to talk to them, like I get a lot of the calls, being a North Carolinian, that has helped us. But yeah, you know, like you said, we're ready to go. Hell, I mean, potentially to bring the brand, the authenticity, the approachability to maybe some of our other areas, but still sticking with that same authentic message, because it tends to work for us.
Some of the most successful firm owners I've met know their strengths and limitations. They're not afraid to bring in outside expertise to take their firm to the next level. And I was really impressed when I met Michael D'Angelo, your new CEO, with his extensive background in global business development, operations, and finance. It sounds like he's the perfect complement to your firm. So how has he made an impact, and what has he brought from other industries and applied to your firm?
It was about 2 years ago, Chris, that I realized that I was growing a lot. I was getting almost to 50 employees. We had gotten an HR department. And I kind of had this moment when I realized, I don't really know what I'm doing. I did not go to business school. I'm a lawyer. As things got more complicated in the growth stage, I really felt like I needed someone to come alongside from a business standpoint. I wanted to take somebody completely out of the industry, kind of with the model of the way that Wall Street sets up new businesses, and bring in an operator. And Mike, he's got an MBA, he's 58 years old, he's an adult, you know, we needed that. And he has really helped us to restructure this business in a way that is run like a business. I took him to some of the conferences, the ones that you and I always go to. And over this last year, I've had him shadow me so that I can take more of a strategic role and step back. So this year has kind of been his year to go forward. But he was so surprised, Chris, when we would go to these conferences about how far behind the legal industry is on these ideas, you know?
I'm sure he saw it quickly on tech, right? So him and transportation and the integrations and all the different tech components
and tech and just keeping things run by APIs and then leadership KPI, but the leadership with teams and empowering the teams. For me, at least, bringing an operator in to run the firm has allowed me to have so much more bandwidth to kind of think strategically, to think about what's new, what's coming, create more relationships, spend time on the road doing that. So it is, to me, a real game changer. And anybody that's listening, that's considering, you know, should I bring somebody in? Should I get a business guy? And the thing about it is, you don't have to do it full time. One of the things that we're doing is we let some smaller firms use Mike. You know, I'd send them out and kind of fractional type COO stuff, because some people don't necessarily need a full-time person. But that's how big of a believer I am in it, because I want to kind of export it a little bit. Change is coming, right? You know, the consolidation is coming, and the way that the firms structure themselves now to be potentially attractive to be either acquired or acquire themselves is going to require them to run these things like a business. That's the way that the investors will look at it.
Creating original educational marketing content is a solid marketing strategy. The talk show Attorneys on Call is one of the firm's most successful marketing tactics. The show consists of mock interviews featuring both clients and attorneys and has lasted for over 17 years. As user attention changes, Ben adapts his tactics.
This has always kind of started about this more informational advertising. Hey, here's how these cases are handled. Sometimes you don't need a lawyer, but here's information. Here is how we do things. And sometimes the shows are boring, but people love them because the trust and the information, because when you create and give information, they're trusting you. Oh, wow, they're giving away free information. Oh, wow, this is how they do things. They actually can see us be lawyers and talk about cases. And that's been very successful. But of course, TV is very scattered and the demographic is really changing on that. So how have we then been able to change that same information-based advertising, the trust-based advertising, into a digital format, which we are, you know, in progress doing through in-house videos, snipping down the types of interviews. And of course, you know, everything's got to be like 2 minutes or less, or even less, before people are going to pay attention to it. Again, everybody knows that marketing is all of these different things. You bring somebody in, a client, and you ask them, hey, how did you find out about us? Well, I've always heard about you. My mom watches the Attorneys on Call show, and then I saw a Facebook ad, and then the other day I was driving down the road and saw your billboard and figured, well, might as well give them a call. So it's like five different things. And you can't, it's so hard to track that. It's so hard to track that as far as how that is converting for each of your one thing. As we all know, you are in the business of trying to figure that out too. But to me, the change that I have seen quite clearly, even in the last just 2 years, is going into OTT, transferring our informational marketing into digital format so that it's shorter and they can get out there a lot quicker. And that's kind of how we are not the number one spender in our market. You know, we've got others that spend more money than us, but we've been consistently able to maintain our market share, I think, based on the high level of trust and the branding. You know, the branding that we have done so much in this area, they value our brand. And because we're asking for them to value our brand, we're also asking for bigger cases and more valuable cases. And I feel like the consumer sees that and they think, well, those guys can handle that kind of stuff. You know, one of my mentors for so long, Harlan Schillinger, you know, had really helped me truly understand that, is that you ask for the cases that you want.
That there's a lot of weight to that. And I know Harlan quite well. And I think he's one of the best at that positioning and copywriting and messaging. How is your firm experimenting with OTT?
It can be limited and strategic is simply because of the way it can be placed and the fact that it can be placed on people that could be searching for particular topics on, for example, okay, they're at home and they're on their AT&T Wi-Fi and they're on their phone and they're searching for things that are potentially related to legal issues. Well, yeah, as you know, that IP address then can be pinged and that can be sent OTT TV commercials if we have people that are in that space that could be looking for those. So while you can target better, you don't necessarily have the same amount of money to try to blanket it. And then we've been able to do that within a local space. And I have found that a trusted buyer, that somebody that knows what's going on in that space, but to go to start slowly, and it doesn't take the same amount of money that is currently required, you know, to get an audience or to ding anything on traditional TV.
Yeah, that makes sense. I love the geofencing capabilities of it for the zip code. There's so many different ways of targeting. And I think, you know, once that code's really cracked, I think it's the sky's the limit. I also think, too, when you're talking about consolidation from law, it's a matter of time before these streaming services get consolidated, whether Apple buys Disney Plus and Hulu or what.
Right. And then it's all about the same price now as the cord cutting used to be. So it's all the same. And then it'll just be one thing and, you know, rearrange it. But different platforms you can do different things. Like the way you advertise on Hulu can be different than the package bundles that they'll put it on their. So it's one of those things that lawyers can get tripped up in, I think, because we can be talked to by vendors and like, oh, we don't know. And then we just, you know, so it's just another thing to always ask questions, learn yourself what it is so that you can talk intelligently with your vendor or whoever's placing those ads for you. And of course, being able to get metrics and measuring and making sure it works and changing it if it doesn't.
It's looking at the brand and how you're part of the community. It's a lot of times these individuals only have one experience in their life, right? One auto accident. But have you seen the impact of, oh, you helped my father, you helped my mother, and then circle back down because of that experience and because of that relationship? Have you seen the real impact? Because I'd say, you know, newer firms, you know, whether it's they've been in business for 5 years, they don't have the same opportunity to see that as your firm does.
Right. And it's almost like just generational clients and the stories that they tell. And speaking of that generation, and one of the things that we did this year, and I've kind of like, as I've changed this firm and we've taken a much smaller firm and over the last several years really grown it, part of that is also incorporating the past and a little bit of that trust history. Bob Whitley, my dad, founding partner, celebrates 50 years of practice. And one of the things that I wanted to do, just because, you know, if you go Disney World, anytime they celebrate an anniversary, they go crazy about it. I mean, they make the merchandise. Every bit of their advertising is on that anniversary. So for this year, it has been all about the 50th. We've created a seal, 50 years of trust, experience, results. That seal is like on our taglines. It's on the new commercials. So it's on the billboard. So we're trying to measure, kind of create that same, hey, we're generational. We're 50 years. You know, your father, your kids, you've all been, know about us, reminding people of that. But also we can't rest on that too. And we have to show that we're moving, we're progressive. We're going to offer you the same good results, even though we've been around for a long time.
I think that's super smart. And I definitely, I went to your Instagram and right there saw the 50 years. I thought that was incredible. You know, somehow I got on your father's Avvo page. I don't even know how. And it was like licensed 49 years. I'm like, holy smokes. Like, just incredible. So North Carolina somehow allows the ability to do direct mail. And it can be leveraged differently where many states have restrictions. Or what goes into that? Does your firm do direct mail, or is it oversaturated in North Carolina? Like, can you help?
Sure. Yeah. You know, that was one of the original things that the firm did many years ago. They would actually, we were groundbreaking. We would send out DVDs and they would explain how to handle your case and stuff. We stopped doing that probably about 5 to 6 years ago, just because of the saturation on it. And that is a very unique part of North Carolina, is that they will allow for direct solicitation. You have to, you know, notify, it has a lot of requirements. It has to say it's an attorney advertising. But I'll tell you what happens is that on bigger trucking cases or cases that they can tell that this is an accident that is a significant claim with significant potential coverage, you know, what we'll see, because some of our clients will show us, is that some attorneys around here will send them a shock and awe package, right? A Federal Express box of all of the ways of how they can help them. So it's interesting, you know, and I think some of the other practice areas are kind of limited in what they can do with it. But that direct solicitation is certainly an issue here. It helped grow a lot of practices in the beginning.
Yeah, it's certainly unique. So I had to ask about that. It does give you a way to I guess, hunt. But I'd imagine just the cost that goes into that, and
the cost that goes into it. And you know, the arguments that are made in support of it, which I believe, which every time they've tried, the legislature tried to get rid of it, or you know, people at the bar squawk about it. Well, let's think right now, what is going on? If you're in an accident and it was caused by somebody that has Nationwide or Geico, the new move is that they are trying to get offers and information to that interest party very quickly. In fact, I am learning now that Geico is using AI, of course, like everybody else is, to input very early on data about the person's accident with a spitting out of the number. Now, we've gotten some of these cases, some clients have hired us very fast, so we know how, we've seen this work. And the numbers aren't crazily bad. It's like they've made some predictive effort here. But the point being is that the only reason for this is that they want to contact the injured person quickly before the injured person hires a lawyer. They want to get an offer out to them, and they will. They'll talk to them. Nationwide even used to go to people's homes. So if you think that's intrusive, well, then the lawyer sending mail a couple of days later, how is that any less intrusive? Mm. And in fact, shouldn't they also have information? So
that's a good point. That's a good counter argument.
And I think we're going to see more of that. I'm afraid that they're going to be doing more of those moves where they try to jump the gun a little bit, and folks, you know, are signing up for these deals and settlements, not knowing how bad, you know, not knowing the potential long-term health effects that they'll not be able to recover from should they sign these deals. So one counter-argument to the whole direct solicitation.
In Illinois, for example, you have these guys that, you know, the tow truck drivers signing up cases and stuff, right? The direct, how does that play into direct solicitation? Like,
right, you're gonna have bad actors filtering into every situation. We used to call there was a whole collision center back in the day. We used to call it Record Gate because we kind of busted that kind of situation going on. We have these runners and people that are doing that kind of stuff, and it's like everything else, there's going to be abuse in the system, and I feel sorry for the clients that get suckered into it. We certainly had to rescue some folks out of those situations before. You know, the consumers are getting smarter. There's better ways to find out legitimacy, and we just hope through that kind of ways that that's going to certainly be countered, but there's always going to be I mean, you hear the stories from the guys out in LA and the competition and all that kind of stuff. It's just going to be that thing, you know? So you just got to stay above it best you can.
Yeah. Yeah. The worst that I've seen is Chicago. Chicago's just, it's just terrible, at least from everything that I've heard. I'd be remiss if I didn't ask about Lejeune. So, you know, being in North Carolina, has that made a big impact? Like, you're there, right? There's so much money in torts going after these Lejeune cases. Have you found that it's helped with the dual rep issue where, like, hey, I know my firm, it's right here, it's in North Carolina. Talk to me about specifically about Lejeune and basically your firm's interest in those cases and specifically.
That's right. So, you know, being that we were established in East North Carolina, which is, you know, I would drive by Jacksonville, Camp Lejeune as a kid on the way to the beach. We were established here. So when things happened, I realized that I had to, especially when I saw what was happening with the out-of-state lead brokers and all of this, I really wanted to very quickly offer the brick and mortar option for folks. And that really, by advertising not nearly as much as the others did, but very early, we tended to get a lot of really strong cases because a lot of this population, especially the ones that had very legitimate cases, they're old school and they're older, and they would prefer, one, talking to a lawyer that is in North Carolina, or two, they've heard of. And some of them, a lot of them wanted to actually come in and visit, and some still do. So that allowed us to position ourselves. And I kind of thought of it early in the day, like, you know, the law firms that were on the Gulf Coast during the BP spill that were geographically positioned, they had to make a decision. They had to do something to protect their community because they had this opportunity to do so. And I felt the same way about Lejeune simply because it was in East North Carolina and I wanted to offer a trusted voice. And that was effective. And that has remained effective in the client retention and the client dual rep issues that you hear so much about, because we formed very early relationships with these clients, which is tough in mass torts. It really is because of the numbers. But because we did form those relationships, we've been able to maintain our client base and taking them through this process, which is still, you know, a little bit of a road for them, right? There's still some time, maybe another year before we get to a grid and settlement. So that experience has been transformative for us. It allowed us to figure out ways to scale, Chris, that were very quickly that we needed to. And I'll tell you one of the ways that we scaled was bringing in a law firm. You know, there's a fellow that I've worked with here in Raleigh that had some more federal court experience. And so we kind of joined our firms for the purposes of helping those Camp Lejeune clients so we could keep it. We didn't have to refer it out. And now he's on leadership, and we our goals and our mission on that have aligned. And I think part of that takes humility to say that I didn't know everything. I can't do everything. But I do think it's part of the reason I have been successful, because I have been able to say, I can't do it. I need help. Hey, can you help? And can we all do this together? Because I kind of like this new thing where collaboration is the new competition, you know, because if you can find people to help, there's so much work. There's plenty of work. And we can also do it better. You can mitigate your risk better that way. But I found that potential testing of this consolidation of that type of collaboration potentially being more of what's going to happen in the future as there is so much more McLaw coming, you know, the ones that is going to happen. So that was transformative for me, for learning how to scale quickly, learning how to keep the cases in-house, and then stacking my attorney bench with the players I needed to run the cases.
That's fantastic. And I think that's a real skill of yours, and being transparent and that candor, and hey, you bring in the people. It just speaks to just the word that I keep coming back to is authentic. It's like, I'm being authentic. Like, these are my strengths, and you know, I'm going to bring Michael in here. I'm going to bring this individual in here, but ultimately we're all going to win from it.
Right. And I had a moment in Camp Lejeune. I was talking to a retired colonel, a Marine in San Diego, and he had some buddies. And so he was interviewing me to decide whether he should send his cases to me and subsequently other cases. And it was an intense interview. And then part of it was asking me, you know, the federal court, who's going to do it. And I said to him, and I remember in my mind, I was thinking, now, if you tell him this, you're either going to get the cases or you're going to, he's be thinking, you know, you don't know what you're doing. I remember thinking that. So I said to him, I said, well, I did not specifically have the Eastern District experience that I wanted. So I reached out to Miller, and then I explained that relationship. I told him that, and I said, he brought him in. And then He said, well, you know, that's what generals do. I appreciate that. You know, they know their weaknesses. They fill their gaps with their weaknesses, blind spots with people to do that, da, da, da. I was like, okay. And that was a powerful lesson for me. So it's okay to be vulnerable a little bit. Now you got to be careful. You can't be too vulnerable, but it seems that people, they appreciate that. They respond to that. And it creates a connection that they trust you.
I think that's what it comes down to. They're bombarded so all over the place, and that trust component's just more important than ever. Where can our audience go to connect with you and just learn more?
Sure. Well, I mean, you can come to my website, whitleylawfirm.com. Send me an email. I love talking about business of law. I love talking about marketing, and I love helping other people do it. So I would entertain anyone if they just want to call and pick my brain about what's been going on here, what's working, what's not working, because it really is a lot of my life of this is thinking about this, trying to stay ahead of it, because, man, what a quickly changing industry that we're in right now at this very moment. This is kind of the moment.
Thanks to Ben for sharing some amazing insights. So let's recap. Keep it real. Authentic branding builds trust and drives business. Ben emphasizes being approachable, which truly resonates with North Carolinians. This is a great example of knowing your target market and tailoring messaging accordingly. Effective marketing doesn't just sell, it builds real rapport. As Ben shows, coming across as a relatable member of his community pays dividends.
I recently did a TV commercial where I was talking about, you know, you're not the suing type. And North Carolinians just kind of want to figure things out. That's really the root of it. So being able to talk to them, but still sticking with that same authentic message, because it tends to work for us.
Deliver value directly to the client. Educational content establishes your firm's authority and increases client confidence in your ability to solve their problems. But you have to get them the information on the platform they already use. While Attorneys on Call started on TV, Ben is smartly repurposing those interviews into bite-sized digital videos. This strategy perfectly matches the rise of streaming services and consumers' use of mobile.
Sometimes you don't need a lawyer, but here's information. Here is how we do things. But of course, TV is very scattered, and the demographic has really changed on that. So how have we then been able to change that same information-based advertising, the trust-based advertising, into a digital format, which we are, you know, in progress doing through in-house videos, snipping down the types of interviews. And of course, you know, everything's got to be like 2 minutes or less, or even less, before people are going to pay attention to it.
Do what you do best. When your law firm is in growth mode, it can be tempting to try to do it all yourself. But here's the thing. Even the most talented attorneys have their limits. Surround yourself with people who complement your strengths.
Bringing an operator in to run the firm has allowed me to have so much more bandwidth to kind of think strategically, to think about what's new, what's coming, create more relationships, spend time on the road.
For more information about Ben, check out the show notes. Before you go, do me a solid and smash that follow button to subscribe if you haven't already. I'd sincerely appreciate it. I know you won't want to miss out on the next episode of Personal Injury Mastermind with me, Chris Dreyer, founder and CEO of Rankings. All right, everybody. Thanks for hanging out. See you next time. I'm out.